Attention all citizens, it's time for Denizens of the Deep.
So, a couple of months ago, I was at Real Groovy Records, and I picked up an LP of Patrick Williams' music called Carry On. You're hearing it in the background at the moment. And out of the LP came this letter. It was in a little envelope on Pat Williams' personalised stationery. And the letter was addressed to a Mr. Herb Wong, and it read like this: Dear Herb, Joel Leach told me that you were interested in the Carry On album, for which I am most appreciative. I do have an unusual request, as this album is totally out of print. I was wondering if you could tape it and mail the record back to me. It's my next to last copy, it says in parentheses. All the best, Pat Williams, signed by him. And I thought perhaps we can contact Patrick Williams and ask him a little bit about this interaction with Herb Wong, and obviously he never got his LP back, and just see what his thoughts were on that, and then have a chat about his incredible career. So on the line we have Pat Williams. How are you going?
Good, thanks for calling.
I'm just going to turn you up a little there. So did you catch the little introduction there? So we're talking about the letter that you sent to Herbert Wong, who was a prominent jazz critic, and you sent off your copy of Carry On, your last copy, and we've got it. You never got it back.
No.
Have you got your own copy? Did you manage to find another one?
I really don't know. My filing system is archaic, to put it mildly. I try to find something, it can take weeks.
I
give up.
It's the same trying to read through your IMDb credits of all the different film and TV scores that you've done over time. The list just is overwhelming. You must have been an incredibly busy man.
Yeah, I was. For years, actually, I had a kind of a personal mantra. The way you work, the conditions under you wish you will work, and that was essentially that I'm not going to do anything that makes it worse. Because some of these things that I wrote years ago and I recorded years ago and all that, if I can do something that re-record them or whatever and it makes them fresh, then I'm very happy to do it. But you're always running a risk of tinkering with something that maybe you shouldn't be tinkering with.
You did re-record one of your most famous works more recently, the Streets of San Francisco theme, which is and you re-recorded it with your orchestra. Tell us about that process.
Well, actually, that wasn't that recent. It was a few years ago. I mean, it was maybe 2 or 3 years ago, and I went back in the studio and redid it. And it was fun, you know. I think I enjoyed it, and I think it actually got some airplay. I was surprised. I didn't even know that people would remember the show.
I'm just going to play that in the background in case our listeners have forgotten. But it's still around. There we go. That's what it sounds like.
Yeah.
And so, tell us a little bit about your interaction with Herbert Wong. I ask because I think nowadays people might not appreciate the importance of critics. But back in the 1970s, 1980s, and prior to that, critics were very powerful figures and had a lot of sway and influence. Was that the case with Mr. Wong?
Well, he was very knowledgeable. You know, he really was. He was the real deal. He knew what he was talking about. And I never really read a lot of what he wrote about me, to tell you the truth, but I had a lot of respect for him. So that's mainly it. I mean, he was very, he was always well prepared, you know, and I appreciated that.
Now, speaking of well prepared, when you did some of these TV themes that have been incredibly long lasting, you were responsible for this one, The Streets of San Francisco, also the Bob Newhart Show theme, the Lou Grant theme. How did you prepare?
Yeah.
How did you get into the mindset of making a long last or a hopefully long lasting TV theme?
Well, in that, you know, period of time, that was the whole idea, was to try to come up with a theme that might have you know, some legs. And everybody who worked in television was the guy that tried to do that. And so every show had a theme, and there were some good themes from that era. And then good writers who would write the theme, but then they wouldn't do the whole show. So you could get any composer in Hollywood to do the theme. You couldn't get any composer in Hollywood to do the body of the show if it had all these little short kind of cues. But those themes were written by, you know, prominent composers.
With the you ended up doing quite a lot of cues particularly for Columbo.
Yeah.
And if you research, you know, if you look around online, and there's a lot of discussion on places like the Film Score magazine forum, that where people really relish the music that you, those little short pieces of cue music and some of the background themes that you did for those shows. What was your process making those?
Well, it was always the same. It never varied. And the interesting thing about Columbo was, which actually surprised me, was that what a response it got. And, you know, probably thanks to the internet. But I remember there was a lot of activity on my web page and all the rest when that was coming out again and all. And people really, you know, really liked that theme, and they connected it to the show. I think probably looking back on that period of time, that Columbo theme was probably my most requested theme on the internet anyway.
You also, you've worked with a lot of other musicians, and one of the most notable ones is obviously Frank Sinatra. You actually arranged his last two, you were the musical arranger and musical director for his last two studio albums, Duets 1 and Duets 2.
That's correct.
And
by the way, I'm very proud of that.
Are you there? I think we've lost you, Pat. We'll come back to you. We'll pick that lineup back up and come back in a moment. Apologies, we're having a bit of trouble reconnecting there with Los Angeles. We had Pat Williams on the line, talking about one heck of a career in film soundtracks, TV soundtracks, records like the one we're hearing at the moment, and some fantastic jazzy orchestral work. We'll see if we can contact him before the end of the show. You're listening to 7am Swim, 95 BFM. Let's hear one more from Pat. This is, let's go to this one here, the Lou Grant theme. Got that reconnection. Don't know what happened there, Patrick. Sorry about that. So we've been talking to Patrick Williams, who's a fabled, a storied, a noted film composer, TV composer, and arranger. And you were just in the middle of telling us about your work with Frank Sinatra.
Yeah. So I don't know where you lost me, but I can pick it up wherever you'd like.
So you worked on his final two studio albums, the Duets album, the Duets 1 and 2. And who was the boss there? Was it Frank taking directions from you, or you taking directions from Frank?
Actually, the producer was Phil Ramone.
Mm-hmm.
And did you know Phil? I knew Phil for many, many years. And, you know, he produced every major singer, and at least at that time, anyway. So he, you know, and he knew Frank, and Frank was comfortable with him. So, you know, I worked with Phil, and, you know, it was a game of Frank putting down the basic vocals, and then the duet partners would overdub.
And in the olden days, it was Frank coming in and pretty much doing the takes live. What was your working method then?
Yeah, as he'd come in, not on every tune, but when most of them, he'd come in and do his vocal. And, you know, he was amazingly fast. I mean, it took about an hour for him to sing his vocal. And then it would take a lot longer to put together the duet because they had to be, manufactured, essentially. And the technology was amazing because it sounded like he was really singing with his duet partners, when in fact he just laid down his vocals and left the rest of it to everybody else.
Patrick, you, in your time as a TV and screen arranger, you also released a number of albums on your own. Some of those have been reissued on CD, some haven't. Have you got a particular favorite, one that's a real baby of yours?
Well, you know, it's interesting because those records go over a span of a number of years.
Mm.
So it wasn't, as a matter of fact, there were a couple of albums that were in the same. If I recorded one, I think over maybe a 3-year period, I would do 2 or 3 albums. And then I wouldn't do an album for, 8-10 years. So it was not exactly like I was a regular output, and that made it a little bit interesting. When I would put an album out, then I could go back and try to re-promote some of the things that I'd done before that one.
There's an album of yours called Threshold, which people just adore.
That was from
1973.
That was the first one. That was the first one, Threshold.
Your debut?
That was the one that kind of broke everything open in the jazz world for me. I mean, I was overwhelmed by the response to that album when it came out. I mean, it was just a little jazz album. And it was really a very, very touching.
When you say little jazz album, I mean it was a big band. It was, and you had some pretty interesting textures.
Yeah, I know,
there.
But even with that, the big band was overdubbed. It was maybe 10, 12 guys made that whole record, and at some point we had big band and a singer, I believe, and strings, but it was really a band that was. The best players that I knew at the time were on that record. I loved all those players.
Something we'd like to know is what it was like when the conversation first came up about hip hop and musicians sampling your work. Was that something that came up as a conversation? When you and your other composer friends were playing poker around the card table or something like that, how did that first strike you?
I don't like to use profanity on the air, I was curious. I thought, what are we coming to here? What is all this? Because you make a record, and if you look at least when I was growing up, some of the records that I listened to were classic recordings, and it was a matter of a period of time when they were made. It was the city, it was the players who were at a certain point in their lives when they played on the record and all that. And the last thing you would do would be to tinker with any of that. I mean, it was to me, it was like, why would you want to go in and do anything to that? It's part of recording history, So why would you want to go in and mess with anything? And I just didn't like it. I thought it was a commercial, cheap commercial kind of thing to see if you could find another market. And I didn't really care.
In terms of other composers that you did kind of pal around with, were you a crew, or was it a lonely kind of work?
No. It was a solo operation. I mean, I knew pretty much everybody in town here for for a long time, but I worked alone, essentially. And, you know, and I had a lot of different things that I did. I did films, and I did television shows, and, it, you know, and albums and everything. So there was a lot of variety to what I was doing here over quite a number of years.
If there was a composer that you looked over your shoulder at, or just somebody who really bent your ear, somebody who you really went wow when you first heard it, who would that have been?
Well, there were quite a few, and it would depend on what idiom, what period of time, in terms of calendar time. I mean, was it the 70s, 80s, 90s? That's a much more complex question.
Yeah, that is. Who's bending your ear today? Who's catching your ear today?
Yeah.
Are there composers working in film and TV that are grabbing you at the moment?
Yeah. Well, you know what? I don't watch as much TV. I just decided I wasn't enjoying it, and I didn't like what was now this is a number of years ago, but I didn't like what was going on in terms of music and TV film, because I spent a lot of years in that doing that, and we always took there were a few of us doing these shows, and we always took a lot of pride in what we did, and everybody who worked on the show took pride in it, or at least maybe I had kind of a unique experience, but everybody I worked with took a lot of pride in working on that show. And when I heard that, when I heard what was being done and how they were just sloughing it all off and running rhythm tracks and not even, I just lost interest.
When things were very busy for you, what kind of a taskmaster were you, Patrick? Were you kind of the Buddy Rich school, or like the fella in that film Whiplash?
You know, I was no. All the players that I worked with, first of all, were the best players in the city. So they didn't. I didn't have to tell them much of anything. They knew what to do, and I was always proud of the fact that they seemed to really enjoy working with me. They looked forward to the dates. They came in and they gave me their full attention, 100%. And I always appreciated that. And I always treated them with the ultimate respect. And I think they treated me the same way.
Any projects on the boil now? Any big projects to tick off? Any great ambitions?
I'm sorry, I lost you on the middle of that last question.
Do you have any projects on the boil at the moment?
Well, I have self-starting projects. So if I want to make a project, I just do it myself. That's the way I did the last couple of albums, and I enjoy it very much because I get to do what I like to do with the people I like to do it with. And to me, it's wonderful at this point in my life that I'm still able to have these great players come in the studio and play this stuff.
You've been working with Patty Austin in recent years. Who are some of the other great players that you're still connected with?
Well, it's a little bit like a regular band, but the band doesn't show up but every few years. But it's a lot of the same players. Always, if you look over the records, it's a lot of the same players. I've used, Tom Scott, for example, for 40 years. And, there's a feeling of, I have the people that my go-to players when I work on a project, and a lot of them are the same now as they were when I started.
Wonderful. Patrick Williams, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us over here in New Zealand on 7 AM Swim. And wish you
well, thanks.
really wish you the best of luck with those projects. We'd love to hear some more and
Thank you very much. It's nice of you to call. I appreciate it. Thanks.
And do you want me to send you that album back? The Carry On album?
What? Yeah, sure.
We'll put it in the post so you get it at last after 40 plus years.
Okay. All right, great.
Nice talking to you. Bye.
Bye.
Seven AM Swim.
That was Denizens of the Deep.
I think I need a